the point of this is to provide the best facts-driven show that we possibly can.
Ideally, you have a glue guy who is good.
Hashtag glue guy, hashtag locker room guy. You can't go sign Bobby Holik to $1 trillion. You can't do these things.
Very satisfying.
The absolute best NYR show in town.
This is the Liberty Blue. Rangers Podcast. With Andrew Shelby. And Nick Zeraris.
Rangers fans, welcome to Liberty Blue, the essential New York Rangers podcast. I'm Andrew Chelney, alongside Nick Zeraris. And Nick, a flawless 3-0 week. They won against the Flyers, the Avs, and a wild one for some reason against Arizona. They are 50-20-4, 104 points, are the best team in the league right now, and we're in the home stretch of the regular season.
The Arizona game and the Philly game were both weird. There's no other way to describe it. The Philly game was 2-0 for 35 of the 60 minutes of the game, and then nobody decided to play defense the entire third period. Similar vibe in Arizona, where it was tied for a while there, and then nobody started to play defense. There were rush opportunities going both ways. And then Colorado, they played to a push. And you beat Colorado in the shootout, you feel good about that. Colorado's one of, if not the best teams in the entire league. If you can hang around with them, and yeah, Colorado controlled large stretches of play, they're going to do that. They're better. Their star players are better than the Rangers star players. But the Rangers were able to hold on. Shesterkin was great. And that was the difference. At this point in the season, it's about reacclimating Lindgren and Trouba, which it does seem like we're going back to Trouba Miller full time based on what Laviolette said. Other than that, you know, stay healthy. You want to get as good a seat as you possibly can. If things work out and you get to play Washington, you get to play Philly or the Islanders in round one, that's a really good draw for you. So if you can avoid playing someone good until the second round, that's really all you got to worry about right now.
I really wish Laviolette would break up Trouba Miller. We talked about this, you know,
ad nauseum. We've talked about this with Sam, with Molly, us. We've talked about this for the better part of two seasons.
I really wish they would not do this, but they keep doing this. So that's
at this point, it's like asking for Gaudreau to come out of the lineup. It's not happening, so there's no point in talking about it. It's just frustrating.
But it's again what, like, this week highlights what we talked about last week, where the Rangers are comfortable winning regardless of the situation that presents itself. They played a good game against Colorado. Yeah, the Shesterkin needed to bail him out a couple of times, but for the most part, like, that was a like you said, a push. They played that game tight. It was, you know, they won the shootouts. You could take it or leave it, but regular season, that's how games are ended if no one scores in overtime. So that's, you know, it is what it is. But like, the Flyers game was crazy. Like, that game was a whole lot of normalcy, and then they get to the third period and all of that just flew out the window. It's like, oh, we have two. Okay, so you got the two periods of normal hockey. Now we're gonna turn the sliders up at NHL 24 all the way down or all the way up, depending on what kind of chaos you want, and go. That was the third period. It was insanity. Nobody played defense. Nobody saved a puck either. It was all just like, hey, first 1-15 wins the game. Like, that was what the third period felt like. Rangers won. Adam Fox, great, you know, great goal in overtime. Panarin did a lot of the dirty work to set up the play. If the Flyers had a goaltender, maybe they win that game. But maybe if they had a goalie, the Rangers would play that a little bit differently. I don't know. Either, like, we're just split hairs at that point. Arizona, I couldn't tell you what happened. Because the Rangers dominated the whole game pretty much, except for the times that they didn't. And every time that they didn't, the puck ended up in the net. Like, it was a strange game from the perspective of, like, the Rangers never felt like they were going to lose that game. They were in charge for the vast majority of the 60 minutes. Like, they played the game in such a way that exuded the confidence of, oh, like, we're winning. Like, don't, whatever Arizona's doing, doesn't matter. We're going to win this game. And ultimately, that's what happened. Giving up 5 goals and a lot of, and some of them were just bad defensive breakdowns. I would like to not see that. I would like the Rangers to clean that up. But overall, I mean, listen, they ask you how many. They don't ask you how.
At the end of the day, yeah. At this point in the season, you got a handful of games to go. Most of your games are against teams that aren't in playoff spots right now. I will not be surprised if we see spot sits, especially if teams get in front of them as far as division points and standings. But you got to get Trouba and Lindgren back up to speed. You know, Lindgren's played two games. Trouba's played one. The Arizona game devolved because they realized if they just trade chances with Arizona, they're more talented. And that's not a great mindset to get into of we can outscore our defensive issues, so it doesn't matter how we play defense. I know that in conversations I've had with quite a few people that's the real concern about this group. The forward talent, it's there. This is one of the deeper, if not the most deep, Rangers forward groups we've had in 10, 15 years, probably since Tortorella was the coach, named coach. This is one of the deepest forward groups, if not the single deepest. And the defense on paper is very talented, but it needs to play like it. And there are holes in the defense. And if we are going to see a return to Fox, Lindgren, and Trouba Miller, that is going to put a lot of the responsibility for how this team's future shakes out on those two pairs, because frankly that is in my opinion the biggest swing for this Rangers team. Because I think the forward talent, I have a pretty good idea and understanding of what it is in all range of outcomes. The defense is just, it is so unpredictable and on a night-to-night basis. I mean, how do you give up 5 goals to the Flyers and go to overtime and then go to a shootout against the Avalanche where you only concede 1? You know, it's really weird when you have a game like that on consecutive days. And then the next game you go out there against Arizona and you concede 5. It's really weird. And yeah, I know they were reintegrating Trouba on Saturday. I know they brought Lindgren back in on Thursday. So that's part of it. I understand that's part of it. But like we've talked about ad nauseum, I still believe that's the key for this Rangers team to get to where they need to go, is if the defense can actively be good at defense, help facilitate the transition to offense, which they have done pretty well during stretches of this season, then we're talking about a team that can go all the way. If they are as frantic, as scattered, as disorganized as they've been in some of these games, then you have real cause for concern. But until they play the games, you won't know, because this group is extremely unpredictable.
I do feel like because they've shown that they essentially, and even though this could be a hazard, they could essentially turn it on whenever they want in terms of actually playing defense in games. I feel like once the playoffs begin, we'll see more. I mean, it won't ever be perfect, but I would have to imagine that we'll be seeing more of the Colorado-type defense as opposed to Philadelphia or whatever we saw in Arizona. Because, like, they know better than we do that, you know, they're top of the standings. Like, yes, obviously you want to play a top of your game every game, no matter what, and you play to your strengths, et cetera, et cetera. They're also, you know, they're not numbers on a piece of paper. They understand that, hey, we're the best team in the league. We're playing an Arizona team that is not great, and we can just dismantle them whenever we want. So if we concede an extra goal and score an extra 3 because we can and because we're having fun, that's what they're choosing to do right now. But I feel like once we get into the playoffs, we'll see a lot more of the stringent defense that the Rangers have shown that they can play against the best teams in the league. They have, I think, a 13-8-1 record from my notes against the top 10 teams in the league. Obviously, they can't play themselves. So the top 9 teams in the league, they're 13-8-1. That doesn't come from playing loose defense. That comes from playing a certain style of hockey that dictates the pace of the game and that dictates giving up as few chances as possible. So while it's not the best to see them giving up 5 goals against a team that isn't anywhere close to making the playoffs and essentially a race to see who gets the 10 first, because of what we've seen from them against the better teams in the league, it gives me a little bit of hope that it'll be cleaned up once we drop the puck for game 1.
my counterpoint to that is Laviolette does seem pretty determined to try and make Barkley Goodrow's line a defense line, even though it is not good at it. You know, they tried that the first time they played Colorado in February. And I want to say in the first period of that game, if I remember Peter Buzz of the Athletic's article correctly, the MacKinnon line had 97% of the expected goals in the first period against Gaudreau, VZ, and I don't remember who the other wing was with them, because that was when the forwards were all kind of jacked up because injuries and stuff. But, and again, he tried the same thing on Thursday. My concern with that type of mindset, and he didn't do it the entire time. Zibanejad, Kreider, Roslovic got some shifts against MacKinnon, but I think that is where my main concern about things that are controllable. You know, if you get outplayed, you get outplayed. That's not something you can control. But if the coach is going to make certain matchup decisions based on his perception of things, of, all right, I want Gaudreau, VZ, and whomever out there against MacKinnon. Fox and Lindgren had a really rough time in that game against MacKinnon and Rantanen. MacKinnon and Rantanen are two of the 10 best players in the entire world, I understand, and they didn't score. You know, they held MacKinnon off of the score sheet for the first time in a home game all season, which is something to feel reasonably good about. But that's the type of game where if you reduce it to just a handful of sequences, you're going to take Colorado's guys. And that's the concern I have when they try and play that type of game. You know, that's what the Tampa Bay game 3 weeks ago was on the Thursday. It was that type of game. And then Tampa Bay star players blew the game open. We've also seen the other end of that, where they've played Florida reasonably well in the last few weeks. Colorado is no slouch. So I think my big concern is, can we find that next gear? You know, they've played reasonably well in a bunch of different types of games. That's something we highlighted last week, that they've won high scoring, low scoring. They've won with goaltending. They've won with the power play. Can we find a middle ground where we're not only relying on one path to victory? Because game to game within a series, it's hard when you're up and down like that. To go through the playoffs and to go on a deep run, you need to have a certain baseline you're operating at. And the Rangers' baseline this year is great. I mean, we still have our reservations about how Zibanejad has played this year, and they have the best record in the entire league, which says a lot about this group and the potential it has. But that's the thing, man. Good doesn't win the Stanley Cup.
I think the one counter that I'll say to your counter is for the Gaudreau stuff is Peter Laviolette has shown that if something isn't working, I mean, for the most part, except for Truba Miller, for the most part, if he's trying things out and they're not working, he's at least okay with changing it up. He's okay with, okay, the Gaudreau line against MacKinnon is ass and it's not working. Okay, let me try somebody else. At least he's malleable in that sense of, I'm not just going to stick to my guns because I know better than everybody, and damn it, it's going to work because I said so. To a certain extent, he's doing that with the defense pairing, sure, and, you know, keeping Zibanejad and Kreider together when they're struggling, et cetera, et cetera. But he has also shown where, you know, situations like a few weeks ago where Gaudreau was just awful against MacKinnon, and that took one period for Laviolette to be like, okay, somebody else has to do this because they can't. So while I would like to see more malleability if things aren't working, at least there's a certain baseline. And yeah. I would have to imagine that come the playoffs, there's going to be maybe even more of that, because, you know, there's only 7 games max in a series. And if things don't work and things continue to not work, guess what's going to happen? You're going to lose the series. So I feel like Laviolette is at the point of his career, and he's done this so many times. Obviously, he won the cup, you know, back in 480p TV, but
he won it on the Versus Network.
Yeah, he did win it on the Versus Network. But he's been through so many coaching stops. He's adapted to the situation that's in front of him right now. I do feel like I have at least a baseline confidence that if things aren't working in their current juncture, that Peter Laviolette will at a certain point change things up instead of just throwing the same people out there and expecting different results.
I think the reason I have a little more pause about it is because a lot of the Rangers' faults and shortcomings, they're tendency based. They're habit based. It's not a structural issue. It's not a talent issue. It's guys making that split second decision where it just doesn't work. You know, I forget what player on the Flyers it was that Keandre reached his stick out to try and poke the puck away, and the Flyers player just spun around him completely. Miller swung his stick, and Shesterkin didn't have a single chance to play the puck because Miller waited too long to make a read. It's those split-second decisions. Those are not things that I think – those are not problems that I think are a coach thing. I think a lot of this is going to come down to, can these guys correct on their shortcomings? Because a lot of these tendencies – are just general shortcomings. They are holes in these guys' games. They have refused or failed to adapt to. And that's not something I think coaching is going to get out of, especially when we're talking about guys who are, you know, like Trouba, like Miller at this point, relatively ingrained in a certain way of playing. Now, there's no reason they can't. It's just like you said last week when we were, when I was talking about reintegrating Trouba and to the effect of, can they get Trouba to make fewer big mistakes and focus more on taking low risk plays, that type of thing? It's going to be hard to make that type of change, which is why I feel a lot of this is going to come down to, can they find that gear and stay there? And one last thing before I throw it back to you, I was talking about this with Hunter over the Hunter Hodes over the weekend. Can the Rangers are have the Rangers gotten their form too early? I do think that is something that I am a touch concerned about, that they've gone on this crazy heat, like 21-1-3 heater since the Connor Mackey game now, as opposed to if this started about now, 10 games in. Because I do think you want to be playing reasonably well going into the playoffs, but I don't think you want to peak too early, because I do think that happens to teams. I do think teams will have really good regular seasons and feel comfortable, and then they get into round one and they get punched in the mouth. Like Florida 2 years ago comes to mind. Boston last year comes to mind. Every Leafs team since 2017 comes to mind. So I am a little worried that all of this happening and all of this going right now might be a little too early.
Yes and no. I mean, I definitely share a little bit of that sentiment. I also, like, the Rangers' schedule the rest of the way isn't very difficult.
No.
So that's a double-edged sword of, hey, there's no top 10 team to play against to essentially, quote-unquote, get ready for the playoffs. At the same time, you can use this runway to, one, rest guys, because you're not playing anybody super important. You're not. You can rest guys. You can clean up whatever else you need to clean up, et cetera. I also think that to counter one point that you're saying, the Rangers have these concerns, sure. Every team is saying that about themselves as well. I think, like, you know, the Rangers right now are the best team in the NHL, and we're breaking down, okay, these are the good things that they're doing. Also, if they don't fix their faults, they're not going to win anything. Every team that's in a playoff spot right now is saying the same thing. Like, and that, like, that's the one thing that we have to kind of keep in mind as well. And I'm not trying to, you know, be like, oh, everything is great. Everything is fantastic.
No.
Like,
I understand what you're saying.
But it's like, it's one of those things where you also, like, you have to look big picture and say, okay, if we just continue to play for the most part, the same way that we have been playing against the best teams, because we've beaten, you know, the best teams, we've shown that we're the best team in the league and that we can take two, you know, we can win these tight games, these open games, however style you want to play, we can play the same way and we can beat you at your game while we do it. The Rangers have shown that they can do that all season. So, they obviously have concerns as well, and we've talked about them throughout the season. But every team, I feel like, it has the same, if not more, because they're below the Rangers. They have more concerns about their team than I feel like the Rangers do, because the Rangers are the best team in the league right now.
This is a regular season versus postseason conversation. I think that's been a franchise issue for the Rangers for a long time, where they're a really good regular season team. You know, they're going to hit the 100 points threshold for the third straight season. They've won 50 games, I believe two of the last three. During that run under Alain Vigneault and John Tortorella, same boat, 100 plus standings points. Really good regular season team built around goaltending, timely scoring, situational play. I think that's really where the source of my apprehension comes from. Because when the games tighten up and the other team is fundamentally sound and can't be as won't be as susceptible to trying to open the game up, it really benefits them that their most likely first round matchup is either going to be Washington or Philadelphia. Those are two teams where if the Rangers take a stumble at some point in that series, I wouldn't be that worried about it. You know, if they split at home in round one, I wouldn't be that worried about it because Washington is really just Charlie Lindgren and three or four guys. Philadelphia is just three or four forwards and a lot of forechecking. Those are things, those are opportunities to get things right. Changing up gears a little bit, one thing I wanted to touch on this episode, they really, 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 I don't know what they do, how they do it, but the fact that Shesterkin was playing legitimately awful into early February, and now our biggest concern is, well, can the fourth defenseman be a little bit better? Can the 12th forward not just be an albatross? That I don't know how. I don't know. Same thing with Jonathan Quick. You know, in, I want to say December, we recorded an episode where Quick had already had like 12 or he already had like 6 or 7 wins in early December. And we said if he won like 3 more games the rest of the year and they got like 15 standings points out of his starts, that was an unequivocal success. They've kept it going. And
yeah,
the goaltending has been timely. It's rounding into form.
He didn't have a great game against Arizona, for what it's worth.
Yeah.
But yes.
He
looked very... Jonathan Quick like has those moments where he makes himself look as tiny as he physically can in nets. In nets sometimes. Sometimes he plays normal, the way that he has been playing for the most part of this season. And then he played games like that against Arizona where he's like all crunched up and he's just not making himself big. And he lets the net be bigger than it is. And listen, he's won the vast majority of the games that he's played. That's not like it. I love that. Like, fantastic. But yeah, like that was my one thing about Jonathan Quick, like against the Arizona game. I'm just like, dude, can you make yourself any smaller, please? Like the acrobatic stuff was a little strange. I don't know. It was one of those games for him.
He's 17-5-2,
but overall,
9-1-3. He's been everything fantastic. You need from a backup.
Yeah.
The Rangers have really, they haven't exactly got it down to a science. They have missed occasionally on backups, but for the most part, the goaltending being the foundation of a reasonably good regular season team is why they are where they are.
Yep.
The fact they were able to be where they were in early February with Shesterkin having a below 900 save and being at like 20th in goal saved above expected, a testament to how much room they had, which is a theme that I think is the undercurrent of this season, that they really haven't looked amazing for multiple games in a row. They've won a lot of games, but they're not clean. They're not pretty. And their good players have gone on heaters. If they can get everything to line up or stagger everything where they get the cold streaks out of Link, where it's hot guys who are hot and cold together, I think that's the biggest thing the Rangers need. And it's something I was looking through box scores the other day of teams of years past, like 2015, 2014, 2017, 2012, teams that went on deep runs. The issue the Rangers had was that a bulk of the scoring was on the responsibility of 2 or 3 guys. I think this group is a little bit deeper than that. I think you can realistically say they have 3 to 4 forwards who are candidates to be close to, if not over, a point per game in Panarin, Zibanejad, Lafreniere, and Trocheck. That's 4 guys who can flirt with point per game, plus Adam Fox, who should be a point per game. He was the only player who was a point per game in the playoffs in 2022. Formula-wise, that's what you need. You need at least 3, if not 4, plus a defenseman and the goaltending. The recipe is there. Everything is laid out. It really is going to come down to if the variance gods like you or not. And I know that's unsatisfying, and I know that's something I've said a lot over the years on this show. The best team does not always win. The Rangers are one of the best teams in the entire league. They get the wrong matchup in the first round. They go to overtime twice, and they're looking down the barrel of a game 7. Anything can happen. So It's a complicated conversation because I had somebody ask me that the other day, you know, if the Rangers don't win the cup this year, are they fucked? You know, is this their best chance? Is this the last best opportunity they're going to have? And it really does kind of feel like that. If it doesn't line up this year, it's going to be at least 2 to 3 years before they can go back for it. So they really have to do everything that is controllable needs to be synced up. There are some things that aren't, you know, the other team can play better. No matter how good the Rangers are, eventually they might run into a team who's just better than them.
That's one of the things too, is you take a look at the NBA, for example, and you look at, okay, the teams that are genuinely capable of winning the NBA championship.
There's like three or four
teams. Because the NBA is very low on this, on the luck based totem pole. Hockey is by default and by design the highest on the totem pole, because you can shoot a puck from the blue line, it goes off of an eight knees and four backs, and it goes in the net, and what are you going to do about that? Those are shots where you will never be able to replicate if you tried for 100,000 times. But the one time you did it in the course of a game, it goes off of six skates, three gloves, one helmet, and it goes in the net. Like that. That you don't see that in other sports. So inherently, this is by design a stupid, silly, fun sport. Like you because you can't dictate breaks like that. You just can't. Over the course of a hockey game, whether it be one series, a season, however much you want your sample size to be, these kind of wacky moments will happen. And they will happen at random whenever the hockey gods decide that they happen. So there's a layer of unpredictability that you will never get rid of in this sport. So the best way to deal with it is to just mitigate it, because you will never get rid of it fully. You will never be able to control every bounce. Not every bounce will go your way. Sometimes you'll hit six posts and lose a game. Sometimes the other team will have eight shots, but five of them go in because it bounced off of four shins and into the back of the net. Like, these are things that are going to happen over the course of a sample size. So the best teams, they mitigate that the best. Where, okay, oh, you get three goals by these weird bounces that should never have gotten in. Okay, we'll just score four because we're better, and that's the game. The best teams find a way to stare luck in the face and say, it doesn't matter, we're better than you anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing. This group is really interesting in a lot of different ways. You have a lot of guys at various points of their careers. You have a couple guys who were on their way out. You know, you got guys like Quick, who accomplished everything they've wanted to and some, and just stuck around purely to spite the Kings and to try and trace down Ryan Miller, which he's successfully done. You have a lot of guys on this team who haven't won anything, who have been around the block. Guys like Trouba, guys like Zibanejad, guys like Kreider. A lot of miles, a lot of playoff games, a lot of heartbreak. You have young guys like Lafreniere, like Kako, like Miller, like Fox, that feel, I do not know what the next iteration of the Rangers looks like in my head. I think that's the biggest reason I feel that this year has to be the year for everything to line up, because I struggle to think about what the next iteration of the team looks like. The team that's built around Lafreniere, Miller, Fox, Shesterkin, because there's a lot of unknown beyond those guys. I imagine Zibanejad and Trocheck will be here because those contracts are immovable. I imagine Panarin will probably be here because those contracts are immovable. And speaking of Panarin, I know this is a tangent off of what I was just saying, but it came up the other day in conversation, and I thought it was a good point. The reason I feel so strongly about this group, you have three or four guys all having career years lined up at the same time. That's the type of regular season luck we're talking about that it takes to go all the way. You know, Lafreniere putting it all together, unequivocally part of the reason this feels like the best group.
Yes.
They have
fantastic.
They have a fourth guy.
Also, this man doesn't get any power play opportunity on the first power play. He doesn't get PP one time. The fact that he's putting out 50 plus points without getting power play one time is nothing short of a, like, he's fantastic.
Yeah. I cannot wait to do a real deep dive after the season, after the playoffs, because my biggest curiosity is what's changed for him, Trocheck, and Panarin, other than Panarin shooting the most. I want to get a better understanding. Are they playing off of the rush more or less? Are they generating a certain type of look that's been more dangerous? Because I don't want to chalk up all of Trocheck and Lafreniere's success this season to Panarin playing like a Hart Trophy guy, even though that's probably the obvious answer. You know, if you play with a guy who has 100 points, the two guys who play with him are going to put up a lot more points than they have in years past. I know Trocheck is pretty close to setting a career high in points. He probably won't get his goals total because he had 31 one year in Florida. But the
thing about that, and I don't mean to cut you off, but the thing about the points, though, is it's one thing to get points. It's another thing to get meaningful points and also play well on top of the points that you get. Like, Lafreniere realistically should have like 6 or 7 more goals than he has. He's hit post. He's gotten unlucky a few times. Like, he's played so well that he's probably getting less points right now than he should be having at this point of the season because he's been playing so well. Yeah, I mean, defensively, still not amazing.
No, that line is never going to be good defensively, exactly. But
we've talked about that. Like, but offensively, he's been nothing short of like 5-on-5 sensational. And that's exactly the player that the Rangers have desperately needed for multiple years now. The 5-on-5 guy that will say, get out of my way, I will do this myself. And while Lafreniere isn't at that upper echelon of player yet, he's still 22. He's still got years left, you know, to develop and get even better than he is now. He is starting to become that player of, oh, we're at 5-on-5? Oh, I'm not getting power play one time? Oh, it's fine. I'm just going to score a goal anyway because it's my time. We need a goal? All right. Let me just go ahead and score real quick. Like, that's the kind of player the Rangers have desperately needed. And now it looks like they have one, and that's been a massive revelation for them as well.
I think him and I think Miller are the two biggest swing points on this team. I think if the Rangers go on a deep and meaningful playoff run, we're going to see Miller take a real step at some point during the course of that playoff run and really cement himself as the second best defenseman on this team. And I think Lafreniere is going to force his way into a bigger role, whether that's on the power play, whether that's getting that line even more minutes out 5-on-5, which will probably happen. You know, that's another tool that they have that will help them that other teams won't. You know, other than Florida and maybe Toronto, there are a few teams in the entire East that are going to be able to bet out. If the Rangers are in a tie game late and they need a goal, there are few teams who can do better than putting Fox out there with Panarin, Trocheck, and Lafreniere. That's one of the best fours, and it doesn't even matter who's out there with Fox, whether it's Lindgren, whether it's Gustafsson, Zach Jones, whoever. It doesn't even matter. If you have Fox and Panarin on the ice at the same time, that is two of the 20 best players in the entire world, two maybe of the top 10 players in the entire world on the ice at the same time. What I was talking about before with MacKinnon and Rantanen and Makar being able to control the flow of the game so well, the same thing applies there. This is not empty calorie offense for them. Some guys in the lineup, yes, there is empty calorie offense. Those guys, it's not. Panarin is making games happen. He is bringing guys to him. When he gains the zone, he is setting guys up at the net front. He is letting the shots fly and forcing defenses to respect his ability as a shooter, which is in turn giving the other guys of this lineup so much more room to operate. And it's why they're so good in overtime in those 3-on-3s. When you put Panarin and Fox out there at the same time, those are two guys who don't have to think about anything. They subconsciously know where the play is going and what needs to be done. And it's why they make it look so easy. Like, I was at the game on Tuesday against the Flyers, and I saw Fox take the stride, and I said, if he hits the net, it's going in, because he had a clean look, and Ersin been pretty mediocre at that point in the game. Guys like that, you don't have to worry about. This is something else that we talked about a lot last summer. Fox did not have a good series against the Devils last year. No. He looked slow. He got out body. He got out physical, and he lost a lot of loose pucks. Whether or not Lindgren being physically compromised was part of it, that's a fair point. But that was part of the reason the Rangers did not look good in that series, that Adam Fox, arguably their best non-Shesterkin player, was ineffective. So the fact he's put this together, and I don't think he'll get Norris consideration this year, unfortunately. He'll get some down ballot votes. He'll probably end up finishing fourth or fifth. But over the last month, he really seems to kind of put it together in a way that's not just the underlying numbers. Just watching him, he looks a lot more aggressive. He's up to, what, 15 goals on the season for a defenseman, which is insane. I want to say that's one of the five highest goal totals by a defenseman in the league this year. Him going, Panarin going, Shesterkin going, that's a really strong foundation. Really strong foundation.
100%. And it's not all, teams very rarely get the opportunity to have one of the best forwards going at an incredible, Panarin has broken his career high in points, and there's still, what, 8 games up in the season, 9, something like that? Like, he's still got, 2 weeks left of hockey to play, and he's already surpassed his point total. He's been one of the best forwards in the league. Adam Fox is one of the best defensemen in the league. Strickland's one of the best goalies in the league. And now also on top of that, Trocheck's having a career year. Lafreniere's having a career year. The depth is there. Will Cooley's having a really good rookie year. Like, there are guys on this team that are performing at or above expectation, and these are the top guys, as well as some of the depth pieces that you had question marks going into the year of, Will Cooley, he made the team. If he can get 10 goals the whole season, that's a massive success. He's already surpassed that. Like, there's multiple people on this roster that are exceeding the expectations that were brought to them.
Don't forget Brodzinski.
Brodzinski's as well.
Given you 7 goals out of nowhere.
And he was a guy that was in the, he's been a career minor leaguer. So the fact that he's not only is he not a negative impact on this team most of the time, he's scoring goals sometimes. Like, he's got 7 goals. The guy that they gave the lifetime contract to in Barclay Goodrow scored his second goal of the year in a shorthanded goal somehow against Arizona Coyotes. And they're paying him a lot more than what they're paying Johnny Brodzinski. And Brodzinski has got 7 goals. So overall, this is a team that's got a lot of talent, and it's not untapped. This is a team that's got a lot of talent, and they are using it, and they are exceeding expectations. And that really is one of the biggest bright spots and has me excited for the playoffs. I don't want to, I don't want to get too excited. Because we've been out there before with this team. I don't want to jinx anything. I don't want to say anything out of line here, but this team has a great vibe around it. A lot of their players are playing well to this point, and now it's just a matter of having everybody healthy, bubble wrap the people that need to be bubble wrapped if need be. Just does it like these games. Sure, you want the President's Trophy, you want the top spot in the Eastern Conference. That's all great. That all comes secondary to making sure everybody's healthy game one. Just get there.
Pittsburgh, New Jersey, Detroit, Montreal, the Islanders, the Flyers, the Islanders, the Senators. Of these final games, there's only one team of those that's currently in a playoff spot. That's the Flyers. Not a particularly good team. Someone the Rangers have handled. They've won the first two against Philly. The Devils, Pittsburgh, dead bodies at this point. Their seasons are over. They have nothing to play for. Detroit is mathematically still alive, but hasn't played good hockey in probably close to a month at this point. The Islanders, they're dead. I know mathematically they're still alive, but they have not put together two consistent games in a row since they won 6 in a row.
This is a very niche meme, but this is for the second wild card spot of that very old SpongeBob episode where SpongeBob's at the beach and he has an ice cream cone or something like that, and he's like, oh, you can have it.
Yeah,
it's like,
give it to him, SpongeBob.
Give it to him. Yeah, like, oh, yeah, you can have it. It's like, this is what's going on with the second wild card spot. Like, nobody wants it. No. Everyone's losing. Everyone is fumbling at the 1 yard line for this final wild card spot. I don't know what's happening. Detroit stinks. Washington stinks. Everybody below them stinks. And nobody wants this wild card spot. Somebody's got to take it. Somebody.
It's preposterous that Washington and Philadelphia might both make the playoffs. And this is in an environment where the commissioner's talking about adding two more teams and all of the insiders keep trying to do, well, the NHL should be like the NBA. There should be a play-in. You could not, on no planet should there anyone on this planet be subjected to watching the Red Wings play the Sabres to try and get into the playoffs. That would be horrendous. I understand the idea.
It'd be fun, though.
No, it wouldn't. That would be horrendous hockey. You want to watch Patrick Kane cherry pick against Tage Thompson on one leg? That sounds horrendous. The play-in in basketball has a little more juice because, as you said, one or two guys in basketball can swing a game because of how few guys are involved. Hockey, it's a lot harder for one guy to stand out and make something happen. But yeah, they've got 1, 2, 3, 4. They got 8 games to go. The playoffs are going to start the 20th, according to Pierre LeBrun. We don't know if the Rangers are going to be on day A or day B, so they might not start till the 21st instead of the 20th. But you got to have a good feeling right now.
Yeah.
If they can round out these final 8 games, they win 6 out of 8, beat up on these bad teams, give the Islanders one last loss, beat the Devils one more time just for good measure to really make sure that body's dead, poke it with a stick just to be sure. That would be a really good feeling going into the playoffs. Not like last year where a lot of us had that nervous apprehension of, oh, God, they're going to play the Devils in the first round because they played that game at the end of March against the Devils last year where the Devils stomped them, where the Devils won, I want to say 7-3, 7-4, something like that. And that was just the lingering taste in everybody's mouth. This is an opportunity to solidify your issues, beat up on bad teams. You get to give Patrick Kane one last middle finger if you body the bag the Red Wings too. This is a really special group that has the potential to do what we need them to do. It is ultimately upon those individuals. If you are the superstitious type, by all means, wear your favorite pajamas or the certain jersey or the t-shirt, whatever it is.
Just make sure they have the Rangers logo on it. Like
whatever floats your boat.
Just do the Tavares, just, you know, right team on it this time.
Yes. Whatever floats your boat, if you're the superstitious type. That'll just about do it for this week's episode of the Liberty Blue Podcast. Make sure you are subscribed wherever you get your podcasts. Leave the show a 5-star review. If you are watching over on YouTube, hit that like button for the video. Hit the subscribe button. Subscribe to the channel. We're over 340 subscribers now. The community is hungry for good Rangers content, like we are all hungry for a Rangers Stanley Cup. We'll talk to you guys real soon.
Later.